End of policing. He demonstrates that the great expansion of police authority has come to exacerbate the very problems they're supposed to solve. He discusses how to counter the warrior mentality and police reliance on force and weaponry, and describes actually operating successful alternatives. But he insists that no reform will substantially succeed unless this country deals with deeply entrenched inequalities and injustice. Again, that's Alex Vitale on Friday, October 11th at 6 p.m. at PSU Smith Center, 1825 Southwest Broadway. Imagine a world beyond policing. That's no impossible dream. More information can be found on KBOO.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, it's a nice day, sort of cold.
Yeah, it's, hey, I'll take it. Sunshine, man.
Yeah, really.
Got to store it up while you
cancer,
can around
yeah,
these
cancer,
parts.
Skin cancer, very good.
Yeah, yeah. Start it now, incubate it during the winter.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris.
Yep.
And we want to hear from you. 231-8187. What are we doing?
Boy, howdy.
Boy, howdy?
Has there been some news in this last week?
What, you mean
since
like,
we last spoke to y'all?
You mean like traitor? Traitor? Not Trader Joe, but traitor really?
No, not that at all.
Oh.
an official impeachment inquiry has been opened into the President of the United States.
Yeah, so what?
Oh, yeah, so what? There's a lot of what there, so...
So?
I'm not sure where I'm going with that. But anyway, there's a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. The ground has shifted dramatically in terms of the security of the president's tenure in office. We're going to get into those details. I know many of you out there are wondering, has anything actually changed? And my answer to that is yes, some profound things have changed. So hopefully we'll be able to illuminate that for you during this hour. But I have an update first on a topic we visited a few weeks ago on this program.
Sure.
That was the display of anti-fascist imagery at Providence Park for Portland Thorns and Timbers games. Remember
yes,
when we talked
yes,
about this?
Yes. Very yes, exciting, actually.
Indeed. Well, to sum up that controversy, the display of the Iron Front symbol, which is an anti-fascist symbol dating back to the early days of the Hitler regime in Nazi Germany, was banned throughout Major League Soccer venues and National Women's Soccer League venues across the country because they said it was an inherently political symbol associated with Antifa, whom the league branded as a violent paramilitary organization.
I've never seen that symbol carried by Antifa.
It has been, yes.
Yeah? Okay.
So anyway, to sum up, we had a representative of the Timbers Army here on the show to talk about the ban. That guest talked about negotiations with the league, which were going forward in partnership with human rights experts. And the good news is that the league has decided to alter its language to overturn that ban.
Cool.
It has no longer bans the Iron Front in stadia around the country.
So really?
Now, yeah, Timber supporters and other supporters are free to display that symbol. Here's what's really interesting about this whole situation. The argument put forth by the fans, I think it's a brilliant one, really helps encapsulate the argument against fascism in general. Here's what it is. They said that fascism, by its very nature, is necessarily prosecutorial, oppressive towards members of underserved and marginalized communities. It's
true.
Part of the fascist
true.
Deal.
Yeah.
Right. To persecute minorities.
Right.
So they argued that this is not a political issue, but a civil rights issue, that the Iron Front is not an inherently political symbol, but it is a pro-civil rights symbol. The league agreed.
Well, I'm glad.
I'm glad, too.
But I got to say, it's all political.
Yeah, well, everything is when you come right down to it.
Well,
right?
I mean,
but now you are free as a soccer fan to show your anti-fascist bona fides
and spend a bunch of money on a ticket to watch.
Yeah,
the game.
And expensive beers and stuff.
A lot of gear.
Yeah, indeed. So that's good. That is good.
No, seriously, that is very good.
And even outside the soccer community, I think it helps us better encapsulate our opposition to fascism. So good, good on you, Major League Soccer.
Yeah.
All right. So back to the matter at hand. Nancy Pelosi last week, in the wake of the revelations of a phone call between President Trump and the newly elected president of Ukraine, has launched a full impeachment inquiry.
I'm a little confused. Isn't he by career a comedian?
Yes.
No, I really.
Yes. He was up until this is his first venture into public office. This guy is a comedian. The
Amazing.
President of Ukraine.
Amazing. Maybe we should have a comedian. We do.
Volodymyr Zelensky. No, we don't have a comedian.
Well,
comedians are by nature intelligent people, so that rules out.
Generally, yes, that's true.
Yeah. So this conversation happened, and I'm sure you know all about this, so I'm going to try to encapsulate this as quickly as possible. There's many millions of dollars in military aid that was approved by Congress to give to Ukraine to use to resist the Russian army, which is occupying a chunk of its country.
Middle and Song of the Red Army.
Not the Red Army anymore.
No, well, no, that's long away from Red Army.
This
You're
is
right.
Putin's kleptocratic army.
I don't know if they have a song. Though,
right. So the first time since the end of the Second World War, we had an aggressive territorial seizure in Europe. Right?
Yeah.
We had basically, invading a chunk of a neighboring country and taking it as your own that had gone out of fashion. Right? This is the first time since the end of the war that this has happened in Europe. So Ukraine, since 2014, has had a hot war on its territory against a much larger and much better armed enemy, Russia.
Yes.
Right. So the United States and others have been given the Ukraine military aid to resist the Russians. Congress approved a large chunk of money and material to go to the Ukrainians. President Trump decided that he was going to withhold that money from the Ukrainians pending their help with a little bit of a domestic political problem that he's involved in.
What was that?
Trying to get reelected so he doesn't go to jail.
Well, now, see, there's a motive. Boy, I would surely want to be president rather than go to jail. And I don't even want to be president.
Right? But still, one's in jail and one isn't, right?
Really?
So you can take
really?
The presidency every single time.
You can go and find people in the pornography right. industry to be intimate with.
You can.
Not when you're in jail.
I don't know, but I'm guessing you're right.
Well,
right.
Depends on your proclivities.
The president talks to Zelensky on the phone, says, hey, we'd love to help you with your little Russia problem, but first I want you to help me with one of my problem, which is dig up dirt on my most likely political opponent in the upcoming presidential election in the United States, former Vice President Joe Biden.
Boy, and I don't even particularly like Biden, but.
Right. Now, those of you who have been paying any sort of attention know that this is only the latest in a long line of impeachable offenses committed by this president.
Well, it's getting bigger and bigger as we see investigations.
This seems like an opportune time to apply the shoes on the other foot test.
What's that?
Here's when you ask yourself, what if President Obama had done all of these
things?
Oh,
but you see, he's a person of color.
Well, indeed, and he's also a Democrat. Had President Obama done any of the things?
Wait, which is more important to the people who hate him? His fact that he's a Democrat or a person of color?
That's a very good question. I think they hate him first because he's a person of color.
Yes, absolutely.
Next, because he's a Democrat. The two together are just the end of the world. Right. So, where was I? Yes, the shoes on the other foot test. Had President Obama, or any Democratic president for that matter, committed any of the acts for which President Trump has drawn criticism, he would have long ago been impeached. Long ago.
Yeah. And I'm glad you said drawing criticism, because there's no doubt about what this so-called president has done.
Right. So many, many impeachable acts committed up to this point. But this one, it's really kind of surreal just how cut and dried and obvious it was. So we had this report, which was issued from a whistleblower within the administration, within the intelligence community, detail to the White House, and an expert on Ukraine released this whistleblower report implicating the president in this. The first, the White House said, no, this didn't happen. We're going to release a transcript of the call to prove that it didn't happen. And they released what wasn't a transcript of the call, but was actually some notes taken on the call. But the notes released by the White House absolutely implicate the president. They're acting like what they released was exculpatory, but it actually dug him in even deeper. We even have the president, and I'll dig up that quote in just a minute, saying, laying out the quid pro quo with Ukraine, saying, yeah, hey, I'll give you this money that you need, but you got to help me defeat my political enemy here in the United States.
Now, remember, this money had been set up by the Congress of the United States, whose job it is to do that.
Yeah, the Congress appropriates money.
Yeah.
So if we're keeping track of impeachable offenses here, the president unilaterally deciding not to use that money for the purpose it was intended is itself an impeachable offense.
But wait, there's more, right?
There's so much more.
So much more. Australia.
Apparently, the president has enlisted the State Department to go around the world. This just gets crazier and crazier. Not only to help build a case against Joe Biden, but also to retroactively, in official language, obfuscate and absolve the Russians for their interference in the 2016 election. It just gets weirder and weirder and weirder. All of these signs seem to point to a desire to free Russia from the economic sanctions imposed upon it after it decided to invade the Ukraine in 2000. I did it again. Invade Ukraine in 2014.
Yes.
Yeah, it just gets weirder and weirder, Joe.
I can't. It's really hard to believe. And this is a guy who really loves fascist dictators, or any kind of dictator, to be fair. He's a universal dictator lover. Which is a weird perversion, let me tell you.
Yeah. We're learning more and more about this as every day dawns. And there's so much that has come up even in the last week. We know that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo listened in on the Ukraine call, which is in itself weird and possibly implicating him in this as well. Engineer Ray has provided us with some additional information. Go ahead and read that, Joe.
It says, other thing, there's a lot of
this
talk.
Is the president talking to the president of Ukraine.
Right.
Okay.
There's a lot of talk about Biden's son, that Biden stopped the prosecution, and a lot of people want to find out about that. So whatever you can do with the attorney general, that's the Roy Cohen of this administration. Yeah. About that. So whatever you can do with the attorney general would be great. Biden went around bragging that he stopped the prosecution, which he did not do. So if you can look into it, it sounds horrible to me. That's the president.
Now, there's a bunch of things being conflated here.
Yes.
Okay, as you can imagine, the president's supporters are spinning frantically trying to find a way out of this mess.
Well, right? You know, I don't want to make a religious insult, but it's like never mind.
You don't want to make a religious insult.
No, I realize there's no way I can say
it. That's probably wise. You should heed that impulse, Joe.
Yeah, whirling something.
Okay, got it.
Okay.
Okay, so I want to rewind history here a little bit. Following the invasion of Ukraine by Russia in 2014, the United States stepped up.
Well, that was so they could get access to the Crimea. Let's remember that.
Access to the Crimea.
A strategically significant move.
Indeed, yes. Not to mention a place where a lot of Russians like to vacation.
Well, yeah, it's nice there.
All right, so in 2014, following the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, the United States and many Western European nations and the European Union stepped up its support of Ukraine as a bulwark against the first act of territorial aggression in Europe since the end of the war. So part of this diplomatic effort was led by then Vice President Joe Biden, who went to the Ukraine. I did it again. Went to Ukraine.
Yeah, you got to get rid of the. That the. Got
I do.
To
that
go.
that is a Soviet-era relic.
Yes, it
and
is.
And I really need to stop doing that.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, wait. We say the United States of America.
We do, yes.
Never mind. But let's get on accurate. With it.
Biden led this diplomatic effort. He went to Ukraine, and he did something then which a lot of conservatives right now are holding as an equivalence to what Trump did with the current Ukrainian president, but it's not the case. There was a man there, Viktor Shokin, a prosecutor in Ukraine, a guy universally regarded as corrupt. Now, if we dip back a little bit farther in history, we go all back to 2004. Ukraine had something after a disputed presidential election called the Orange Revolution. Do you remember that?
I do. I remember it.
It was really pretty inspiring. You had literally millions of people camping out in the big square in Kiev in Ukraine in sub-zero temperatures, protesting the shenanigans in that election.
And what I like best about that was the government tried to dump all the truth, all the documents. They threw them in a swimming, I believe it was a swimming pool or a small lake, and then people fished them out.
Yeah, and we had all kinds of weird stuff going on around that time, including an attempted assassination by poison.
Poison, the Russians by love the Russians. Poison.
Yeah, radioactive poison. It gets really, really creepy.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, ever since the fall of the Soviet Union, really, Ukraine has had this tumultuous and tenuous relationship with democracy. Prevailing socioeconomic political forces there have been exploited by Russia. Russia has tried ever since then to keep Ukraine as more or less a puppet state. But then there's been this internal democratic movement within Ukraine that's been pushing back. So a lot of these forces pushing back one against the other. The end result of this is that Ukraine has been marching steadily towards a more democratic state of affairs, opposed all the while by Russia. So one of the people who acting on Russia's behalf was this prosecutor, Shokin is his name, Viktor Shokin.
Right.
One of the reasons he was on the radar of the United States, the European Union, and others is that he was refusing to prosecute cases of corruption within Ukraine. So here's this national movement wanting to root out corruption within the Ukrainian government, wanting to root out and displace pro-Russian forces within the Ukrainian government. All of that was being stymied by this prosecutor, Shokin, who was not doing his job. Biden comes in at the head of this U.S. diplomatic effort with a bunch of aid for Ukraine and says, we got to get rid of this guy, Shokin. He's standing in the way of prosecuting these corruption cases that we really need to prosecute. Plus, he's a puppet of the Russians. We need to get rid of him. That happened. Now, around the same time, Joe Biden's son took a job with a Ukrainian gas company.
Shouldn't have done it.
No. This company is called Burisma. It's a big player in the Ukrainian gas market, which is huge, basically. Europe gets most of its natural gas from Russia, much of which has to travel through the Ukraine as it gets to Europe, right?
Right.
So Biden's son, Hunter, gets a job with this company on its board of directors, pulling in about $50,000 a month, which is a good gig if you can get it. Right?
Yeah. All good right. Gig.
So,
if you can get it.
Right. Hunter Biden was not accused of any wrongdoing, nor did any investigations into that job turn out up any evidence of wrongdoing or criminal activity.
Yeah, but unwise. It was unwise.
And we should point this out. This is a sort of coziness to power that frustrates so many listeners to KBOO, so many people on the left. Really, really, should the son of a sitting vice president be getting a job like this?
He's eminently qualified because he knows nothing about gas or anything else.
Right. I mean, he's, eminently.
But he's very handsome.
Very handsome. And also related to the vice president of the United States.
Like his son.
Maybe it may have been technically legal what happened there, but certainly doesn't appear to be ethical.
I don't know about ethical. It's unwise.
I'll come out and say it. I think it's unethical for the son of a sitting U.S. vice president to get a gig like that while his father's still in office. I think that's unethical.
Well, I think I agree with you.
Okay. Nevertheless, no wrongdoing was found. So what the conservatives are accusing Joe Biden of doing is firing that prosecutor Shokin,
right,
to stop an investigation into his son. That is not true. That is not true. The two are entirely unrelated. Biden was pushing to fire this prosecutor, as was the European Union, as was the International Monetary Fund. All sorts of big players are trying to get this guy out of office so that they can finally start rooting out the corruption that's in Ukraine. Right? So two
right.
completely unrelated things. So we fast forward to last week when the evidence of this phone call was released. Trump is leaning on the president of Ukraine to dig up dirt on his domestic political rival. This is a textbook example of graft, of bribery, of extortion, of high crimes and misdemeanors against the Constitution.
In other words, typical president of the United States of this time behavior.
Yeah, indeed. So since that time, conservatives have been spinning like crazy. The president has come out suggesting that the whistleblower be executed.
Yeah, executed.
He is absolutely losing his stuff, and we're going to read some of his tweets here in a little while. So in a nutshell, that's where we are. The impeachment inquiry has been officially declared by Nancy Pelosi. The committees of jurisdiction, there are six in the House, have stepped up the pace of their investigations, and articles of impeachment will in all likelihood be drawn up by the House and voted on.
Yeah, yeah. That the question is whether or not the Senate, which is barely predominantly a Republican, will go for it.
Right. But an important tipping point has been crossed here, which is regardless of whether or not the Senate removes Trump from office, there is a constitutional and moral obligation to hold the president accountable for crimes against the Constitution. In other words, if the president commits an impeachable offense, should he be impeached? The answer finally is yes.
Duh, yes. And I want to know, what about Giuliani, the crazy boy?
Giuliani, the crazy boy, has been acting as the president's private ambassador, more or less. Officially,
with no official role.
Well, he's officially the president's private attorney, but he has no official governmental role.
I'm not sure that there's such a thing as officially the president's private attorney. I mean, I'm not sure.
Well, he's been hired.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Money has changed hands.
Right. So the extent to which those things are official, it is.
Yeah.
Giuliani has been traveling Europe attempting to dig up more dirt against Joe Biden and pushing the president's agenda in all of these places.
But he's America's mayor.
No, he's not. He's nuts.
He's a crazy boy.
Yep. And so since this revelation came forward last week, the president subsequently admitted to it on television. Rudy Giuliani admitted to it on television. And the president was implicated in the transcript of the phone call he released.
But wait, I'm not sure Giuliani is actually paid. If he's not paid, he's really not his lawyer.
Well, that's the relationship that they claim exists.
Well, like money has to change hands to be a lawyer. It can be a dollar, you know.
Yeah, it could be. We don't know if that actually happened. They say it did. And for all intents and purposes, I think we can assume that they're correct.
Yeah, I don't know. You can't assume anything with this crook.
Okay. All right, so we're going to dig into this a little further as we go on here, but let's take a phone call.
Yeah, okay. Maria.
Maria, good morning.
You're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you guys?
Fine, how are you?
Good. Well, I am calling in the name of my children who are all in elementary school.
Uh-huh.
To give you an idea of the new generation who are cynic, and you would not believe how a second, fourth and fifth grader know, discuss, and are aware of all what you said. That is scary, but also very, very nice to hear.
Well, I think that's good too. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Now, to give you an idea of the people, I live in Hillsborough that attend an elementary school in the Helvetia area. When Donald Trump became what they call in second grade the alleged president of my country. My son and his second grader boys and girls, 27 of them, created a group called Second Graders Against Donald Trump.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's impressive. And depressing at the same time.
Yeah, no. Let me finish the title.
Okay.
Donald Trump. So these are, they have a newsletter.
Really?
Now they're in fifth and sixth grade. Since they are in second grade, they had a biannual newsletter called, bear with me, The Faker.
The what?
The Faker is the name of these elementary school kids.
Ah, okay.
Newsletter. Fake. Well, wow. So they asked me this morning before they left to school, and their friends also, their friends' mothers called me last night because they had a meeting, an impromptu meeting at school right before they jumped on the bus, and said, we as children cannot do much more than talking to our parents. So my children listen to KVOO since they are infants.
Wow.
Right?
Wow, we're able to reach children. My,
hey,
my.
Joe, they say that you talk too much.
Well, we probably do, you know. This is...
No, you talk too much.
No, you talk too much. No, it's
they
you.
They like you. Yeah, you talk too much. Anyway, yeah. So they like you. So they asked me, they know you guys are on the air today, and the other kids, boys and girls, know you guys are in the air, on the air.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they can't listen to you because now they're in school. So they demanded, like this, that I call you as an adult and ask for advice from you guys on how elementary school kids in Hillsborough could help to get Donald Trump out of the White House.
That's great, except...
That's my mission.
Except now, I'm not clear because your call's a little bit muddled. Are you calling from Israel? See how confused I am?
No, Hillsborough.
Hillsborough. Oh, it's as muddled as Israel from here.
No, so advice on how elementary school kids can help get the president out of office. I could say they can write letters to their representatives in Congress expressing how they feel. They can make a sign and take it downtown and join in one of the protests that are going on almost all the time.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of ways.
And there's no rule that they have to say how old they are.
Exactly,
you know.
They have done all that, mm-hmm. and they even write these letters, handwritten letters with drawings, and they have sent letters to the president.
Well,
that I was able a couple of times to make photocopies before I sent them.
Well, it's great that that's happening, but you know the president doesn't read anything.
That's what they say.
So, you know.
They know. They are very aware, Joe, and you probably know. You know, the young are very cynic, very smart, and they are tired of what we've done with the world, right? Not only.
Oh, I think it's the children, actually, the children's crusade, as it were, which is leading the fight, unfortunately, because it's children, against climate change and so on.
Yes.
I think it's a marvelous thing. I think it's a very, very healthful and healthy thing.
I know. Now, my last question is, as a parent, you probably heard these too. It's terrible to see 5, 6, 7 years old and older, but starting at 5, kids suffering of anxiety. I work in the school system because of the state of the world. It's so unfair, right? So tiny. They're in kindergarten and they know that their chances of survival are kind of slim, right? If we continue on this path. So that's the saddest part for me, right? We're messing up their childhood big time.
I'm going to give some other people an opportunity, but I'm really pleased. I have to say this. I think out of the mouths of babes comes truth in this situation. And I want to thank you for your call.
Okay. We got some other callers, but I want to sort of put a bow on this conversation.
Put a bow?
No, that was a bad metaphor. let me just say this. So the opposition, the right, not the opposition, supporters of Trump, opposition to, I think, a lot of listeners to the show, is spinning madly trying to defend the president. They're bringing up all the stuff about Joe Biden in the past. They're bringing up all the stuff about Joe Biden's son in the past. Here's the thing. Even in the worst case scenario, even if the accusations that they're flinging out are all true, okay, let's stipulate all of that for the sake of argument. It doesn't matter. Because we have a transcript of the president of the United States on the phone pressuring a foreign leader to dig up dirt on his political opponent.
With the Secretary of State listening in.
With Secretary of State listening in. We had the president admitting to it on television. We had the president's lawyer admitting to it on television. I mean, this is about as dead to rights as anyone could ever be caught doing something like this.
Well, and it's only it's the one issue that is clear enough and strong enough to go with for impeachment. But there's lots of other stuff.
Right. So as this unfolds, as you're talking with your Republican uncle at Thanksgiving this year, don't allow yourself to be distracted by any of this business. Stick to the facts of the case, which are we have a record and an admission of the President of the United States extorting a lawfully elected foreign leader to help him with a domestic political problem.
No, I think that's the facts. That's
all right.
The facts.
Now, even more about this case that is damning for the president is here's how this all works. This was a whistleblower complaint who came forward under the strictures of an existing whistleblower statute,
right,
that allows for people, if they witness an egregious abuse of power, to come forward about it, and it affords them some protection under the law,
right?
So this person came to the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community. This is the Inspector General was appointed by President Trump. The Inspector General deemed this complaint to be both substantive and credible.
And
meaning there's there something there, and this guy's in a position to know, right?
And then
inexplicably went to the White House with this complaint. And the White House, very predictably, sat on it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't till this news of this was leaked that this all came forward.
Well, in fact, the whistleblower became so concerned that he or she, let's be clear about that, that he or she went around the process and got the information out without using the regular route.
Right. So we have a yet another violation of the law by this administration. They should have come forward with a whistleblower complaint. Instead, they decided to conceal it from Congress and sit on it. So this is looking really, really bad for Trump and his gang.
Oh, but there's so much.
There is.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 231-8187. Harry, you're next.
Greetings, gentlemen, and thank you for taking my call. I'm glad they're finally going to impeach Trump, but what about the other crimes that he committed? Will it be added all in there, or will they be doing it separately?
Well, hopefully, I don't know the strategy.
Hopefully it's going to be separately. I mean, like the Mueller report. That's one that could be done.
Uh-huh.
The Mueller clause about him making money from the government, that's another one.
Well, that's the one I love because he makes a lot of money. he wanted to have all the big conferences take place in one of his losing money golf resorts.
Uh-huh.
And, Doro, I think.
And
it was.
Ripping up the Iranian treaty.
Right. So very stupid.
That actually is impeachable. So it's like he has all these things. But thinking back to Clinton's impeachment.
Yeah, he stained a dress, you know.
Yeah. It took Congress, I think it was 6 weeks, to impeach, put the impeachment of Clinton. But everyone keeps forgetting, what did the Senate do? They didn't accept the impeachment. They didn't say so if it took 6 weeks, if this one fails, they're going to do another one, and then they're going to do another one all the way through the election. And I think that's what they really need to do because the Senate's not going to convict them, so it's for moral causes. You know, this is a crime they commit. People should know about it. If they vote yay or nay, that's different, but everyone will know.
Well, I want to say this. I'm not sure that these staunch Republican supporters of Trump, who initially didn't even want him to be their candidate, I'm not sure that they're going to hold on. They may get so nauseous themselves that in order to stop themselves from vomiting, they may decide to get rid of Trump.
Yeah.
Dump Trump.
Yeah, okay. The next thing I like to talk about is A was talking about, what's going on in Ukraine. You have to remember when the president of Ukraine, who was Russian, had to flee.
Right.
Well, you have to remember,
yep,
ethnic Russians have lived in Ukraine for centuries.
Yeah.
So you have to understand, these are actually ethnic Russians, and what's going on is ethnic cleansing of Russians. When that happened, they purged all Russian government officials, you know, working for the government. It was technically a kind of a civil war. That's what was going on. And some of these provinces, which mostly Russian, they were forced to. Well, the language now is Ukrainian. We're going to switch them from Russian to Ukrainian. You have to change all your. So it was a really big problem with What's going on? This civil war is going on. It's not the Russia itself is not doing it. It's these ethnic Russians, ethnic Ukrainian Russians. So, that's one part that we're not, because of political reasons. We don't have, don't get me wrong. What happened to Crimea? Well, what's the population of Crimea? Actually, majority of them are Tartars. They're Muslims. So, and I think you remember, Joe, the charge of the Light Brigade.
Oh, who could forget the charge of the Light Brigade?
Yeah, well, that was Russia against England.
Yes.
So it was, you know, so everyone knew that Crimea, even though they divided up during the Soviet Union, they divided up Ukraine and Russia. They never thought it would never happen, so it was no issue. There's Russian bases and stuff in Crimea, and then the idea that we're, you know, that all of a sudden Crimea wants it back when there's no Crimeans live there.
Well, Ukrainians.
Yeah,
but you're opening up a door to a much more complex thing, which begins let me finish. Which begins with the fact that when the Soviet Union collapsed, instead of the West creating a set of buffer states and or members of NATO, we did a very aggressive thing, which legitimized the anxieties of Russia, and that is one of the root causes for all of this stuff.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Thank you very much. Oh well.
Yeah. I'm going to have to learn more about Ukraine.
Yeah.
It sounds like there's all kinds of
currents. Well, also remember Chernobyl was in Ukraine.
This is true, yes.
And also remember that all of the disaster of that involving the incredible amount of radiation, which we're just learning about now from that disaster, was made to fall on the parts of the former Soviet Union, like Belarus, by seeding the clouds, actually seeding the clouds so that all that radiation which was in the clouds, would fall as rain on these hapless people along these other parts of what was once part of the Soviet Union, now independent states. This is part of a horrible, horrible reality that is a scientifically factual matter that is being ignored, as far as I can tell, all over, because everybody wants to put their faith somehow and some reason in nuclear power, which is, I think, a disaster.
Yes.
But anyway.
But we digress.
We're digressing. Yeah. I apologize, but it's good to know. Good to remember.
Okay. Let's go to Francis. Francis, good morning.
Hi. Your conversation you just had caused me to think about how wherever in this world there is civil unrest or conflict going on, it somehow some corporation is involved and right in the middle of it.
Well, you know, so, late-stage capitalism.
Yeah. Making money. But I wanted to remind you, and I know you know, that as McConnell said yesterday, if the House passes the impeachment, the Senate is required by the Constitution to have a hearing.
It's a trial, formal trial.
Right, and the trial is presided over by the Supreme Court Justice.
Well, the head of the Supreme Court. Yes, you're right.
Yeah. And so there may be some sense of nonpartisan decorum in that trial.
Well, it all depends on whether or not Roberts gets his act together and is an honorable man.
I think it has been apparent to me that in some of his rulings, he is.
I have hope.
So there actually will be perhaps a nonpartisan trial, and the Vice President Pence has been implicated in as complicit in some of these actions.
Yeah, I guess he prayed on it and decided to support the president, huh?
So he may also be gone, and that would mean that the Speaker of the House would be president.
That's correct. That's
so that
the way
would
it
be
works.
Kind of interesting. Yeah, so that would be Nancy Pelosi.
Yes, it would.
And I think that's probably one of the reasons why she's been a little bit guarded on making sure that they have all their ducks in a row before they do this.
No, I think she's properly and appropriately conservative, not in the left-right sense, but in the let's make sure we're doing the right thing well.
Right, and I think they are. And I agree that I think there's more than one issue that he could be impeached on, and hopefully they will have a couple more than just this one when they actually finally do the impeachment. But I view him as somebody, you know, who thinks he's a player who's getting played really bad, and he hasn't quite figured that out yet. But
wait a minute, who's the player that's being played badly?
The man who calls himself President of the United States.
Oh, yeah. And, the profiteer. Yes.
He's in way over his head. Way over his head.
Well, yes. And everybody should remember that his magnificent wealth that he brags about, which we don't get to know about because he never did the thing that every other president has done, which is turning his income taxes. Remember that all of it is derived from his father's work, and his father was a notorious racist.
Right, and also a lot of the loans, quote unquote, he got. It's interesting that perhaps it might be a little bit of money laundering going on there. So, you know, he shouldn't have become president if he didn't want anybody to find out about all this stuff.
Well, really, I mean, you know, his wife, when it was announced that he was winning, to everybody's surprise, burst into tears because I think she's probably brighter than he is.
Oh, perhaps, I don't know. Well, but anyway, I'm believing in this Constitution that it's going to work, hopefully.
Well, I have no idea. We'll see. It really depends on a lot of factors.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, and so far things are starting to fall into place, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Take care.
Hey, thanks, Francis, for the call. I appreciate it.
You know, all of this is pretty amazing, pretty bizarre. The botched, and I have to say this, even though the Russians interfered and so on, the botched election, previous election, had a lot to do with a bunch of assumptions that were made about the way in which American politics works, and it turned out to be not a good analysis. In fact, remember that that Clinton actually had a larger popular vote. And all of this depended on the system, which basically was put in place as a conservative device to protect the interests of the South.
Yeah.
And
she's talking about the Electoral College.
Electoral College, yeah. And she did not campaign in the northern industrial states to the extent that she needed to. And that was a mistake, I think, of arrogance. I don't know what else you'd call it. But never mind. The fact of the matter is, whatever happened in that election, certainly with the involvement of Russia, whatever happened in that election, Trump got to be president. He is probably the most unqualified, and remember there have been some really bad presidents, the most unqualified president of the United States yet.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I mean, he's a guy crook. He's a gangster. He hangs out with gangsters. He said he wanted Roy Cohen, a gangster, to be his lawyer if only he weren't dead from AIDS.
That's one of the more surreal things I've ever heard come out of your mouth. I just had to chuckle there.
Well, what's surreal? It's true. It's all true. I know. I didn't make it up.
All right. So, but I want to talk for a minute about how the president and supporters have reacted here, because this is pretty important, I think, as I'm going to make clear in just a moment. I mentioned that the president himself on Twitter has been in a frothing rage. I really encourage you, if you haven't done so already, to go back and look at his tweets over the past week or so.
What's a frothing rage?
He is really worried. He is really upset. He's feeling cornered. He's lashing back. He's getting more and more incoherent. His Twitter feed over the past week is just it's just a litany of paranoia, is what it is.
Well, actually, you're right.
He's accusing people of changing the whistleblower statute retroactively to allow this complaint to come forward.
Not so.
He's accusing people of making things up when they're in fact repeating what he himself has said. He has suggested that the whistleblower needs to be unmasked so that the president can see him, look him in the face, you know, like you were in a court of law. He's accused Adam Schiff, the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, of treason. He's accused the whistleblower of treason. He also retweeted the words of a evangelical pastor, a guy by the name of Jeffress, who has suggested that if the Donald Trump is impeached, that a civil war-like fracture in this nation will open from which our country will never heal.
Here's, I don't think so.
Let's think about this, okay? So since that tweet was posted, this was Trump retweeting the words of this pastor who suggests that Trump's impeachment will lead to a violent fracture in the United States.
Right.
Right-wing groups on the internet have responded to this in the affirmative. Okay.
You mean they're threatening to have a war against the United States?
Yeah. There's a group called the Three Percenters, the 3% Security Force. These guys show up at Proud Boy marches here in Portland. I've spoken to some of them. We've even played the audio of those conversations on this program. They call themselves the 3% Security Force in honor of the 3% of people in colonial America who were actually under arms to resist the British, right?
Oh, I see.
So
I get it.
If you're a 3%er, you're one of the hardcore who's willing to take up a gun and fight for your country, right?
Yeah.
That's how they'd see themselves. On their Facebook page, they have laid out how the next civil war is going to happen.
Really?
Yes. There's been a number of other right-wing militant groups who have also come out in support of the president. The Oath Keepers, I'm sure you've heard of them.
Oh, yeah.
We are on the verge of a hot civil war, they said on Twitter. Like in 1859, that's where we are.
Wait, what?
This is a tweet from the Oath Keepers.
1859, like to fight against the freedom of the African-American people?
Right. They're saying it in the height. We're in a situation now like the state of heightened tensions that existed right before the Civil War happened.
Oh, I don't think so.
But this is what these people are saying, okay?
Okay.
The right, I'm going to continue reading this tweet. The right has zero trust or respect for anything the left is doing. We see them as illegitimate too. We will not accept the results of a quote successful unquote impeachment as legitimate. This is fits a pattern of Trump's rhetoric via Twitter, because that's really how he conducts
these guys are
the
talking,
business of his job.
Yeah, these guys are talking treason. Treason.
They are talking treason. But here's the thing, Joe. I think that blood is going to be spilled before this is all done.
Oh, I don't. I don't. I don't really believe that. Maybe a little isolated here and there blood, but not really like a reactionary revolution. I don't think that can happen.
Even if it's isolated here and there blood, whatever that means, that's too that's too much. That is too much.
Well, sure.
This is a pattern of something that sociologists call stochastic terrorism.
That is the term.
Right. Where when a person in a position of authority bangs a rhetorical drum over and over again, calling into question the legitimacy of his opponents, suggesting that violence is an answer to be used against those opponents, and lo and behold, out in the general population, violence is used against his opponents. Look at the shooter in El Paso, for example.
Good example.
Acting on, explicitly, he even left behind a document saying he's acting on the president's claim that brown people pouring across the southern border are invading the country. That's why he decided to go shoot a bunch of them. This is what I'm talking about, Joe. This is why I'm saying I think blood is going to be shed.
Well, you may
before
be right.
This is all done.
You know, as I think about it, there's so much crazy and so many people who are so ignorant and so caught in belief systems around oddly arbitrary fundamentalist Christianity and around the oddly fundamentalist notions about what exactly this nation is or could be or should be, that it could lead to some rebellion somewhere. I do not think it will turn into a quote-unquote civil war.
No, probably not. But I think this could get really ugly and really violent before it's all done.
Well, with a great leader like Trump, how can it not?
This is another guy, a Twitter user called Alkir Mike. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. He is a self-professed member of the 3% movement that I just talked about. He put up a video tweet that has since been taken down off Twitter because it violated Twitter's policies. This is what he said in that video tweet. At the end of the day, Mr. President, just know that if they try some illegal move to remove you from the presidency, if there is an uprising of radical Islamic terrorists in this country, the 3%ers are at your disposal. All you have to do is come out on Twitter or the national media and call us to arms, and we will show the world once again that America has the largest freestanding army with weapons and firepower that they can't even begin to fathom. You will have an army at your side in a moment's notice, Mr. President. All you have to do is say the word.
Well, that's pretty creepy.
That is pretty creepy. See, maybe these people aren't plentiful. Maybe they aren't widespread, but they are heavily armed. They support this guy. They are the member of his Red Eat Meeting racist base. And they are, I think, before this is done, before Trump is out of office, we will see bloodshed over this issue.
What's wrong with eating red meat?
Well, lots of things, but we're not going to go into that right now. So that's where I think we are, Joe. No, we're at a really dangerous moment in American history.
I think you may be right, but I think there's a tendency here for us, and we need to keep a level head in this matter, to acknowledge these things and at the same time see it as so marginal. It's not that it's not dangerous. It's not that it cannot hurt people. It certainly has already hurt many people. But the fact of the matter is that there is a core of legitimate patriots, who many of whom are very conservative, who will not go for some kind of right-wing revolution.
Yeah, but it doesn't take many, Joe. If they're armed with the weapons available to Americans right now, we've already seen what can happen. We've already seen mass murder committed in the name of this president. And I'm saying to you, if you think it's bad now, wait until he's on the verge of being impeached and possibly removed from office.
So do you think we should just forget it?
No, I don't think we should just forget it.
What are you saying?
What I'm saying is, I'm saying people are going to die before this is done. I don't know if there's any way to prevent it.
I don't think that is inevitable. I think it's very possible, but not inevitable. And I think it's important that we, all of us, keep a level head around this thing and make sure that we are clear in our minds about the importance of a legitimate, carefully designed, and well-run impeachment.
Well, let's hope so.
Yeah.
Let's hope so.
Well, I hope so.
Now, I hold forth very little hope that the Senate will actually vote to impeach this president.
Well, I don't know. More and more of these remember that when Trump got the nomination, a lot of Republicans were really uncomfortable, but they made a devil's bargain. And now, you know, here's the devil.
Yeah. Also, if polls are any indication, public opinion is coming around very, very quickly on this issue in the wake of the revelation of this phone call with the president of Ukraine. If you ask, many people on the left have asked, has anything actually fundamentally changed with Nancy Pelosi's announcement last week? And I would say, yes, absolutely. One of those things that has fundamentally changed is clearly there's a majority of the House caucus who is now on board with this. Right.
Yeah.
Secondly, public opinion is shifting dramatically in favor of impeachment. So it's possible that members of the Senate, Republican members of the Senate, can be leaned upon to abandon the president and vote to convict. I don't think the odds of that are very high, but it's possible. And that's a way that that people can apply pressure.
Well,
can get involved and apply pressure.
Here's the thing. Are these people who were elected, who are conservatives, even reactionaries, are they so immoral that they'll do anything, legal or otherwise, in the Senate to block the impeachment process?
I would say for many of them, the answer is yes. I mean, people point to Donald Trump and say he is the problem. Donald Trump is a symptom of a moral rot that's afflicted conservatism in this country for a long time. Look at all the efforts to suppress voting. Look at the separation and caging of families at the border. And on and on and on, Joe. Lying about a war in the Middle East that we put entirely on the national credit card. If you're looking for a moral North Star from conservatives in this country, you're not going to find it. The only thing that is going to sway the Republican senators to abandon the president is massive public pressure.
And
nothing short of that is going to work.
That's why we're doing that. This. Now.
Yeah.
I see.
But okay. If you're looking for moral rectitude, it ain't there. Let's go back to the phones.
Yeah, let's do that because it's getting scary. 231-8187. John, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, folks. I would just like to suggest one thing. The key to this situation is the attitude of the police and the armed forces. In any kind of situation where you try to have a fundamental transition of government, be it the impeachment or a revolution, it's not going to be the 3%ers, 1%ers, however many percentage of civilians, however heavily armed they are. But the question is, do members of the armed forces support Trump? Would they support an overthrow of the way the Congress is working?
So,
is there going to be a taking up a side. I mean, that's where you truly get a situation.
Well, I understand. Let me inject something. You're actually saying that what will make stability in the United States is the same sort of thing that creates stability or lacking it, instability in many small Latin American countries.
Oh, not only many small Latin American countries, every country.
Okay.
You're right.
Is Brazil, Brazil and Argentina are good examples.
Every nation state. Well, so is Great Britain. So is France. So is every nation state is dependent upon the loyalty of the people that they've sworn into their armed forces. I mean, there are only a few countries probably where that isn't relevant. Maybe Norway and Denmark, but certainly in England and Great Britain and France and Italy and Spain and everywhere, basically. It's not just Latin America. You're being naive if you think it's only Latin America. And in the United States, it's always been the case. And so if there is a split, which is, that's what happened in our Civil War, basically. The army split, and people went back to their home states and joined up. So what would be fundamental would be, it'd be nice to find out what the attitude. Now, Trump has gone through a whole lot of generals. Some of them, we can't tell whether they support him, they don't support him. It's a very complicated situation, but that underlies this whole thing.
Well, look, I'm going to say this until I'm proven wrong. I believe, for all of their fault, for all of the fascist tendencies within a military, the fundamental loyalty of the armed forces of the United States is to the Constitution of the United States.
Swear,
and I'm not going to give up that position until I'm proven wrong.
Right. That's what they swear an oath to. And so the question will be whether they uphold that oath.
Well, you made a good point. We're running out of time. I want to give someone else a chance. 231-8187. Mike, you're on the air.
Morning, KBU.
Morning.
Yeah, I know this time is short. I'm normally a voice of curiosity and reason, all that, but let's take their crazy argument to these 3%ers that we see around. Not many. They're a very small minority, thank goodness, and they should go underneath the slimy rocks where they've been back there, and their families and everything else. They should read a little bit about history and learn about Boudica, uprising, completely taken over the island from the Romans. Let's see what happened to them.
She was a queen of Roman era Britain, or in a part of Roman.
Well, I mean, she was a daughter, and then she rallied the troops after her father and herself were treated so badly. The Romans kind of renegotiated on a deal. And anyway, over 100,000 roamed around England killing Romans and destroying Roman cities. Look what happened to them. Okay, that's the same kind of thing that'll happen to them, these 3%ers, if the powers that be see them as a real threat.
Well,
And we'll go General Sherman on them. And I'm a pacifist, but don't just my passivity for pacifism, because I'll be on the front lines, and we'll run them into the sea.
Well,
like
wait. I got to stop this. The conversation is, let me explain. This conversation veers into a world of paranoid political theory.
Right.
Not your fault,
right,
but it's what's happening.
Let me finish.
Okay, it's important to understand that if we announce the legitimacy of this threat,
right,
that we
right
make it a reality. I do not believe that it is legitimate. I do not
right
believe that 3% of the American people will rise up against the government of the United States
right
taking arms. I just don't think it's possible.
These people aren't even 3% of the wild racists in this country. So, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry I didn't make that point.
Okay,
right,
good.
And what worries me is not a large-scale uprising like that, but scattered incidents of mass violence, I think, are possible in this situation.
Well, that is possible, but I don't think we ought to encourage it by making it legitimate in any sense. It worries me, and I think it's a foolish thing to do anything more than comment that it exists.
Right. Can I give a quick example? I've lived in apartments all my life, and in the complexes, I'm friendly, I get to know people, I listen, and you get attracted to people that are kind of folly, maybe a little,
Make your point quick, because we're out of time.
The people that react the most to these things with fear are people that are already unstable. So that's all I have to say. Thanks.
Okay, thanks a lot for the call. You know, there's a lot of unstable people, but never mind. Hey, I think we made our points and our concerns. I think we have pretty much done with this for the moment until the next weird Trump thing. So we're going to talk about some other stuff next week, yeah?
Yeah, we are. Keep it local next week.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, once again, for taking part in the conversation.
Yeah, and remember, this is the best in public affairs and music in the region.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8:59. Coming up next on Alternative Radio, Michael Chertoff, the former Secretary of Homeland Security during the Bush administration and co-author of the USA Patriot Act, has a debate on humanitarian intervention with David Gibbs, professor of history at the University of Arizona and the author of First Do No Harm.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Behind the Bullet film screening on Friday, October 4th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Multnomah Arts Center in Portland. The documentary film Behind the Bullet deepens awareness of untold stories from the U.S. gunfire epidemic. Director Heidi Heumann will be in attendance and answer questions after the film. There will then be a soul box procession into Multnomah Village. Again, that's Behind the Bullet film screening on Friday, October 4th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Multnomah Arts Center, 7688 Southwest Capitol Highway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of John McEwen, Will the Circle Be Unbroken, on Thursday, October 3rd from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Whiteside Theater in Corvallis. John McEwen, founding member of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, has been performing for over 45 years on banjo, fiddle, guitar, and mandolin. Often referred to as the String Wizard, he weaves together songs and stories of his travels and family life. Again, that's John McEwen, Will the Circle Be Unbroken, on Thursday, October the 3rd, from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Whiteside Theater, 361 Southwest Madison Avenue in Corvallis. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage.